Great, thank you. First, I'd like to thank the council for the opportunity just to fill you in on where we are with respect to Harbor Porpoise. As most of you know, the New England Council's had significant involvement in the Harbor Porpoise management really early on in the late 80s into the early 90s before we had some major amendments to the Marine Mammal Protection Act. So I wanted this opportunity to provide you an update on where we are with Harbor Porpoise management, as there's been some significant changes in terms of that stock structure and takes that are occurring in those fisheries. And since a lot of those fisheries deal with sink gillnet gear, which is under the purview of a lot of the management plans that the council manages, I thought it would be appropriate for us to share with you some of the discussions that we've had at the take reduction team level. So in setting up this presentation for today, I had originally thought of kind of a logical progression in terms of how to present this to the council. I thought I might want to remind you of what the NMPS mandates are with respect to the Marine Mammal Protection Act, talk a little bit about the acronyms we use in the marine mammal world, as they're quite different, obviously, than they are in the Magnuson-Stevens world of things. I was going to give you a walkthrough of the take reduction team process, plan process, talk about the formation of the team, talk about an overview of what was discussed at the original team meetings, the management measures that went into place, and I was going to get into some of the data that shows what takes were like prior to the plan, after the plan, and where they are now, talk about why we convened the take reduction team, and then talk a little bit about some of the discussions that took place with respect to the Harbor Porpoise discussions, both in the Mid-Atlantic and New England. However, since we're a little bit further behind, and since I think a majority of this council is pretty well geared in the Marine Mammal Protection Act, I could be wrong, but I'm assuming so, and on the interest of trying to move you forward and get you on schedule to try and get you out here, what I'd really like to do is kind of skip the first four things and really just cut to the chase, talk to you a little bit about why we reconvened the team and what the initial discussions were from that team meeting and what the recommendations were from the take reduction team and what the agency is currently doing with those. So, Mr. Chairman, if you're okay with that suggestion and having me again bump off more of the background and educational components and really focus in on why we reconvene the team and those discussions, I could do so. The presentation in its entirety is in your binder. I'm not sure which tab. In addition to that, I have a copy of the a supplement that has a summary of all of our current regulations that we have on the back table as you leave the foyer area. So if you want me to abridge this presentation, I certainly can. If you want it in its entirety, I'd be happy to do so.
Please do.
Please do the entire?
Abridge.
You got it. Very good. Okay, skip down. Let me do it for you. If you can reach. Great. This will speed it up quite a bit, and I think it will allow probably a little bit more time for some questions if folks have those questions.
Council members, tab 1, document number 9.
Skip down to the chase here. And again, this presentation, its entirety, is in your binder. Great. Okay, then. Looking at after the take reduction plan was implemented, the original one, it was published in December of 1998. Most measures took effect in January of 1999, although some measures took effect right away. This particular slide, what I really wanted you to focus on is the potential biological removal level or rate, and that's the PBR, and you'll see that that's set under MMPA, and that is basically the maximum number of animals that can be removed from the population, not counting natural mortality, that will not hurt the ability for that stock to maintain its optimum sustainable population or to achieve it. The last term on the far right-hand column is strategic. That's another definition under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which basically is the trigger for the agency to take management action. A strategic stock is defined as a stock that is above that PBR level, or it's listed as endangered, or it's about to be listed as endangered or threatened. And you can see after the plan was implemented in 99, based on the stock assessment report in 2001, we did extremely well, and it was actually moved off of the strategic list. And we did very well, with the exception of as you move further down into 2007, you can see we started to go a little bit in the opposite direction in terms of the management, where we moved away from PBR, and we actually went over PBR, and we were headed the opposite direction rather than going towards our long-term goal of the zero mortality rate goal, which is 10% of PBR. To further show you the success of our prior management scheme, if you look at this particular slide, it goes back from 95 stock assessment report, looks at the years of 90 to 93, which again were prior to the implementation of the original take reduction plan. You'll see our PBR level was at 403, and you can see the takes were significantly above that, which led to the reason why we had the management plan. You could see they were on the order of 1,800, and even prior to that, they were as almost as high as 3,000 takes annually. You can see that throughout the late 90s and into the early 2000s, takes continued to be extremely high. Takes is another buzzword under MMPA, which basically means to harass, kill, or attempt to kill marine mammals, and that's obviously prohibited under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. There is an exemption for commercial fishing interactions, which the agency does obviously issue to vessels. Looking at the more current slide, this one's very telling. Again, if you look at the bottom of this slide here, you'll see in 1998, that last row, the 2000 stock assessment, 94 to 98, looking at the average data during that time period, takes were still around the 1500 range. PBR was around the 483 range. You'll notice in 2001, 2002, and thereafter, takes were significantly reduced based on the management measures that were put in place under the take reduction plan, where we dropped the takes almost towards the ZMRG, which is the long-term goal level, where takes went to 323 as opposed to 1,500 in prior years on average. And you can see we did very well with the management until we get really into the 04 and 05 years where things started to turn and we actually started to move away from ZMRG and obviously moved above PBR, which is not a good thing. So in 2007, looking at our current SAR information, we were above PBR, which is obviously makes the stock strategic once again, which triggers management action for the agency. The SAR covered the time period of 2001 to 2005, and we noted just a little earlier that 03, 04, and into 05, we really started to make a turn for the worse in terms of takes. We also had a new population abundance estimate provided in 2006 that showed, in fact, that the stock was not growing. It was something that we had originally thought was the case, but we were proven wrong based on that assessment. We looked at the analysis of the take data and looked at the harbor porpoise bycatch estimates for 2006. And we noted the take locations and where the harbor porpoise takes were observed both inside and outside our management areas, which obviously was a need for concern. And then from 2000 to present, we actually completed, once we got this initial preliminary information, we completed a series of public outreach meetings, one in which we piggybacked off to this council meeting at one point, I believe it was in Rhode Island, if I'm not mistaken, and we re-educated folks about the need to move forward with or reminding them of the current requirements of the Harbor Porpoise Plan. We had immediate results, but unfortunately they weren't good enough to move us away from the need for management. We reconvened the Harbor Porpoise team based on the fact that we were, again, above PBR. excuse me. We also noted when we discussed with the team that we had a two-pronged problem. takes were occurring outside of our current harbor porpoise management areas, and we also had documentation of significant noncompliance with our regulations, particularly in the New England area with respect to pingers. So we reconvened the team in December of 2007 to talk about these issues. This illustration here, I know you really can't see it too well from the board up there, but here we showed areas where we had harbor porpoise takes in relationship to our management areas. Those takes occurred in red, and there's alongside the various management measures, and again, those takes occurred in areas just outside of our management areas as well as during the seasons in which our management measures were in place. Similarly, looking at the other component of our New England component of the plan, this is the Cape Cod South area. You can see there that takes were occurring significantly outside of our management area and also within that area. And the color codes there represent the months in which those takes occurred. And this is based on observer information. So the team met, and with respect to the Gulf of Maine management areas, we did reach consensus on several issues. We didn't finish our work, so we had a subsequent team meeting via conference call, which was interesting to run, but we did it nonetheless. But in the terms of the actual consensus reached at the meeting in Philadelphia in December of 2007, there was consensus that we name or create a new management area called the X-Box, which is between the Western Gulf of Maine closure and the Mass Bay area, and I'll show you that in just a minute. And within that X-Box area, from December and January, pingers would be required, and then in February, it would be closed to all gill netting. For Massachusetts Bay, the team, by consensus, agreed to extend the pinger requirements in that area to November, where traditionally they would start the pinger requirements in December and run those through May with a complete closure of that area in March. So they decided to cover some of the takes that were occurring in that area prior to when the management measures kicked in to extend it to November. They also wanted us to codify the groundfish closure area, the Western Gulf of Maine closure, for fear that someday that closure would go away. There would still be protection for harbor porpoise, so the team asked us to consider that. And then for the offshore area, which, again, I'll show you these in a picture in just a moment, they wanted us to eliminate the offshore closure area around caches. However, they did recommend that we keep those closure areas within caches. And the final recommendation by consensus they asked us was off the Outer Cape. They asked us to fold that into an expanded management area in the Cape Cod South area. And again, I'll show you that in just a moment. So looking at this chart, which I showed you earlier, what they wanted to do, the X-Box area is right in here. And they wanted to create a new management scheme in there. And they also wanted to address the takes occurring here, which there is no current management area. And based on the season in which those takes occurred, they matched up actually better with the Cape Cod South area. So they actually are going to fold that into that management area. And I'll talk a little bit more about the Cape Cod South closure area in just a moment. They also wanted to codify this under MMPA in case that goes away under Magnuson. There would still be protection for harbor porpoise in that area. And in this area here, the offshore closure area, they asked that we, based on the observer information being no takes there, we eliminate that, but keep the closure area here in February, which is an annual basis, and then they also have a closure or a pinger area from, I think it's February through May is the regular pinger area in that spot. Cape Cod South area, in terms of management measures, by consensus that was reached, they really had two different components. They dealt with some education outreach components as well as some management components. They wanted to create a larger pinger area, and I'll show you a picture of what that area would entail. So it basically expands the current Cape Cod South area significantly to cover the takes that occurred outside of that management area. In addition to that, they wanted us to maintain the box that the original Cape Cod South area is in for a complete closure in that area during the month of March as well. And they also developed something which the New England group developed earlier or later in that conference call, and that's a consequence area. The idea here, again, was there was a two-pronged process or a problem where takes were occurring inside the areas and outside the areas. So they developed a strategy by expanding some areas and creating new management areas to deal with the takes outside of our management areas. But they also felt they had to do something really significant to deal with the non-compliance issue. What they decided to do was create consequence areas whereby NIMS would take action after 3 years of evaluating that pinger area. And should the takes be above the bycatch rate of that area, which in the Cape Cod South area is 0.023, it would trigger automatically, without the need of any NEPA action, a consequence area that would have a closure for a certain period of time. And the consequence area is large, and I'll show you that in a picture shortly, and it would be for February through April, so it has a significant impact. And the idea, again, is to get people to comply with the pinger requirements so takes stay below where they need to be, and in which case you wouldn't have to worry about those closures. It's a little bit of a unique strategy that is probably the most important thing I want the council to realize. Excuse me. In addition to that, as I said, we had a teleconference to finish up some of the discussions we had with the with respect to the New England component of the plan. Prior to that call, the states of Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts came together and they developed their own plan that they asked the agency to put before the take reduction team. Very similar concept to what we saw in the Cape Cod South area, where they really wanted to focus on education and outreach of fishermen with respect to the pingers. And they also wanted to develop a consensus sort of plan to ensure fishermen that there is a dire consequence with them not complying with the pinger requirement and by way of a closure, a prolonged closure in those particular areas. So basically what they developed was a consensus area that is significant. It's along the coast of southern Maine, New Hampshire coast, and the northern North Shore area of Massachusetts, and it includes portions of the mid-coast closure area or management area under the Harbor Porpoise Plan, as well as Mass Bay and the newly created Xbox management area. And what we did is we looked at the bycatch rates of those three areas, and then we took the average of what it would be in those areas, which is 0.31, and should takes during a three-year average be larger than that bycatch rate, then we would trigger a large consequence area, which would have closures of that area for a prolonged period of time. So looking at this, I know this is a little bit of a busy map to show you. Basically, these are our current management areas, the Northeast Closure Area, Mid-Coast Closure Area, Mass Bay Closure Area, Offshore Area, and that's the Caches Closure Area, and that's your groundfish closure there. What they did is the Xbox is here. This striped line right here from this point all the way down to here, this would be your consequence area where you would have a closure of that area for several months annually once that three-year period shows that, you know, the bycatch rate of harbor porpoise in those fisheries, gillnet fisheries, has increased. Similarly down here, this is the Cape Cod South area. Right now, this was the current Cape Cod South management area, and what they've asked us to do is expand this area, and you'll see here it's quite significant. It goes around the Cape to address the takes that were occurring here, and here these striped boxes, this box here would maintain for your annual March closure of all gillnets, but should there be a consequence area triggered, it would be both these areas, and it would be again, January through April, so that's a significant time period that those would be closed. I'm not sure if folks at this particular meeting want to know what we did in the Mid-Atlantic. Be happy to show you quickly what we did. Basically, you can see the takes here, very similar to what you saw before. Takes were occurring inside the area and outside the area. And basically what this team decided to do was a series of regulatory and non-regulatory changes. The most significant change they made was they were creating a new closure area, which was just south and east of the existing mud hole closure area. And that would be through February 1 through March 15th. It would be closed to all gill nets in that area. That's the significant component of it. And again, here's an area showing where that closure would be. It's right here. And this is the current mud hole closure here, and then the new one would be right there. In terms of the next step, the agency is currently evaluating the recommendations that were put forward to us by the take reduction team. We're drafting a proposed rule in EA as we speak. We hope to get that out by mid to late summer and have it available for public comment. Our expectation is we'd like to have the final rule in place for a January 2009 implementation. If you need any information, we've updated all of our Harbor Porpoise information as well as provided you with updates of all the materials that were provided at the various meetings that we've had, including public outreach meetings, and that's all available on our website. So that's it, unless folks have some questions I might be able to help answer.
Thanks, Dave. Any questions? Doug?
Yes, with the New England consequence area, was there a specific time frame that you talked about where you'd have the closure?
Yes. Let me see if I can pull that up for you. I believe it coincided with the fall because that was the highest areas. I believe it was September 15th, and then it ran, I think it ran through the duration, so it was September 15th. I'm sorry. Yeah, October through November would be the consequence area. The current ping area is the September 15th through May 31st. The consequence area would be October and November.
Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you go quickly brief us on how the extrapolations work? Because I could see for New England here it says the takes for 2007 was 475, and I think from what I read before that was 6 or 7 observed takes. Can you explain how the extrapolation takes place?
Sorry, I can't. It was done. That's beyond my realm. That was done by our biologists. I'm not sure how they do their extrapolations for that purpose.
Okay, so. All right. Well, what I can say about the extrapolations is observed takes are very, very low, and because of the amount of fish caught, the extrapolation makes the takes look higher. So the more fish that's caught, the extrapolation puts more removals. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bycatch rate in here of 0.023. Is that
harbor porpoise? That's for, excuse me?
Is that?
Yes, that's harbor porpoise caught per metric ton of fish landed.
And so there's a direct correlation?
Yes, that was the analysis that was provided by our scientists.
Okay, thank you.
All set, Mike?
Yeah. And there was a presentation on that whole topic at our initial meeting, and that's all on our – I'm sorry, I can't give you more than that because I didn't do that analysis, and that's beyond my knowledge as far as the science part of that. But it is available if you want to see the full presentation or report that was generated by the scientists. It is on our website.
The Xbox, that's a relatively small area, but important area, I noticed that the consensus was and is that December and January, pingers will be required, then in February it will be closed to gill netting. Does that mean that in February it was determined that there's non-compliance with pingers? I'm trying to understand the rationale here, because pingers are required in December and January. Assume that means the compliance with pingers is okay, that you're satisfied the compliance is at the appropriate level. And if that's the case, then why not just require pingers in February as opposed to a complete closure?
Compliance with pingers is, in a word, horrible. It isn't good at all. Some people have pingers, but not the appropriate, and that's not everybody, but on a whole, compliance is very bad with pingers, whether they don't have enough, or they have them and they don't work, or they don't have them all together. So that's the biggest source of compliance, And the other compliance issue were fishermen fishing in areas where it was closed, regardless if you had pingers or not. So that was the two biggest compliance issues. And far as why, in terms of why they chose to have a complete closure in February versus March, it was to allow fishermen access to that area. So when Mass Bay is closed in March, they could go into the Xbox area with pingers and fish in that area, and then vice versa. Then that area would close in the other area, and Mass Bay would be reopened with pingers. That was the rationale by the team.
Okay, thank you. If compliance is so bad, then why not have a consensus to close the gill netting December through February in the Xbox?
That was an initial thought by the team, but it was felt that two sources of problem were the takes outside the area and the compliance. And we had spent considerable resources to increase our compliance in terms of our enforcement. We developed underwater pinger detection devices that we, in fact, just tested in the ocean with Maine Marine Patrol just last week, actually, and we had some outstanding success. And we also have been working with our observer program to test open-air pingers, so when the nets come up as they're observing, they could detect whether the pingers are actually not only present but actually working. Obviously, the observer program isn't enforcement, but the idea was that tool could be used for pinger detection both at sea by enforcement and also at the docks by enforcement. So the idea was not to penalize fishermen that are legitimately fishing with the pingers. They wanted to give the opportunity for folks with pingers, because obviously the data shows that with pingers, takes were significantly reduced and we're doing quite well, that with the proper tools with enforcement, it would be enough incentive for folks to convert their gear. That was the general logic behind it.
Terry.
Yeah, I am on the Harbor Porpoise team, and we had a very deliberate discussion to that effect. Pingers do work, and compliance has been a huge issue, as you noticed by Dave's slides. We've had a gradual increase of takes, and it hasn't just been lack of use of the pingers by the industry. It's been breakdown of an old technology. There's a new pinger technology, and the state's made a very deliberate choice to push forward with an outreach and education with the industry to help them with the purchase of new pingers and keep them fishing. And the Xbox was identified specifically for the reasons that David laid out, to allow fishermen from the Commonwealth an opportunity to fish in the winter around the other closures that are already there. And it was, and there was a degree of certainty to a one-month closure.
Mike, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think right now the Xbox is open. Pingers aren't required. And so this was an addition of pingers. The problem is the harbor porpoises are having a hard time staying in these pinger areas. And so when they come out, there's not compliance because it's not required, and they get entangled.
Actually, it's funny as that might sound. The team did discuss displacement and issues very similar to what Mike's talking about, and that was one of the things that was discussed about the team, perhaps making pingers required everywhere because of that fact. I don't know if they blamed it on Harbor Porpoise, but that was something that we did discuss.
Anyone else on the council? Dave?
Yeah. How many porpoise you've extrapolated have been taken, but do you have it? How many were taken in areas that aren't required to have pingers?
I don't have the exact figure off my head. We did look at that. And I think particularly the Cape Cod South area was the bigger of the problem, and there was a little bit of a problem in the Xbox area, but it wasn't quite as significant. South of the Cape Cod South area, as you saw there, right around the New York Bight area, there was a lot of takes there. So to answer your question, I think it depended on the area. I don't recall the number off the top of my head. Again, we did have that information we provided to the team. I just don't have the figure readily available.
I mean, it just would seem to me, from the outside looking in here, first of all, I have a real problem with extrapolations. You know, the more you plug the net with pollock, the more harbor porpoise you catch. That's almost inherently nonsensical. I'll start with that one. But the second one would be, you have an issue with compliance, it appears. And part of the problem is, you know, I haven't gill netted in 20-odd years. I look at these charts and I go, I can't figure out what I'm supposed to be putting in the water. It would seem to be a lot simpler to just require pingers year-round, everywhere, and then, you know, you get rid of the incidental issues of the ones getting caught where they're not supposed to get caught, and you get rid of the compliance issue because you can check people going to and from the grounds. I mean, the only way this is enforceable is if you're on scene and somebody's hauling gear that's supposed to have pingers on it and they don't have them, which makes it inherently difficult to enforce because it requires EJ's people to sit there and watch people haul gill nets all day and see if the pingers are pinging. I think you might want to rethink this again a little bit. I mean, I all the education in the world, and I agree, you need education. A lot of people don't understand the rules. But when the rules are so difficult to understand that, you know, you got to go to school, for, you know, night school here for a month to figure out where you can put the gear, I think that's a problem.
Understood, and let me just underscore, these are the recommendations I'm providing you from the team. It doesn't mean the agency's doing those. It just tells you that's the direction we got from the team. As I said earlier, we did consider other things, and frankly, in the EA and the proposed rule, you'll see other options. Obviously, we have to do that. And it's hard because I'm just telling you what the team recommended. Doesn't necessarily mean the agency is going to implement it, but that was certainly the guidance, and it was a consensus, believe it or not. The folks came together, and they felt that that was the appropriate thing to do with respect to that area. So I hear what you're saying, and I don't disagree, but I'm just reporting what was discussed at that meeting.
Right. Now, I don't want you to misinterpret. It's getting towards the end of a long three-day meeting, and I'm not trying to shoot the messenger. I'm just trying to tell you what I see from the report you just gave and from reading through your slideshow before you came. And just, you know, not being a gill netter and saying, you know, I got a hard enough time figuring out the dragger regulations, but if somebody threw this at me, I'd really be baffled.
Who else in the council? Audience? John Williamson?
John Williamson, Ocean Conservancy. I did attend the Harbor Porpoise TRT meeting, too. It was a interesting several days. You've made clear in the description now the contribution that the Western Gulf of Maine closure area adds to the plan and that it's a very important aspect of the Harbor Porpoise plan as well, and that's why you're intending to codify it within the Harbor Porpoise plan. Has any analysis been done as well on the value that the seasonal rolling closures have for Harbor Porpoise protection? The rolling closures also coincide with a large wave of Harbor Porpoise coming into the region, and as my recollection, it was also a significant consideration in the original Harbor Porpoise plan. So, has there been any analysis as how that's contributed over the years?
Not over the years. I mean, we looked at where the current takes are occurring over this last time period, when they occurred, what's in there for regulations, and accordingly. I think originally, as we all know, the Harbor Porpoise Management areas were actually groundfish, the original groundfish rolling closure areas. And they were also happened to coincide with where the Harbor Porpoise takes occurred. And then as those rolling closure areas changed under MMPA, we retained the existing ones that you see now because that's where the takes were thought to have still occurred during that during those time periods. So that's the only thing I can tell you. We just looked at the information of where the takes occur and when, and coupled that with you know, what regulations were in place. I'll also note that in the Western Gulf of Maine, the data also showed that there was actually takes occurring inside that area as well. Even though in the data I showed you, it looks as though it's on the line, it's technically according to the coordinates within that area slightly. But again, that was just the coordinates we're given, and there's nothing, I don't mean anything by it. I just wanted to let you know that. And as far as the codifying the Western Gulf of Maine closure, again, that's a recommendation that the team asked us to do. It wasn't anything that means we're going to do it. It was a recommendation that they do it. We have no way of measuring how many Harbor Porpoise would be taken in there since there's no fishing allowed in there and it hasn't been for quite some time. So I couldn't measure what the effect that would have by making that a harbor porpoise management area should that area go away for, you know, under Magnuson. If it does go away, we just couldn't measure it.
But should the rolling closures for in the groundfish plan go away for some reason, would that have a, do you anticipate that that would have an effect on harbor porpoise takes overall?
Depends on where and when they are. I mean, we have this is separate. These are put in based on where the takes occur. And if takes are occurring outside our management areas like they are now, then we would meet and make those adjustments. But the only time we really looked at the rolling closure areas was in the initial implementation of the plan. Again, those management areas do sync up nicely with what the original closure areas were. And we haven't changed them since 98, and you've changed the rolling closures several times since then. So, again, it just goes where the data takes us and meet the team and try and work out some way to make changes that are positive.
Thank you.
Derek.
Terry Alexander. I think that the I have a gillnet boat, and we have trouble getting pingers. There's only one company left that I know of that makes them in our area, and they're in New Hampshire. And so, I mean, if we add more of these areas in, we're going to have trouble, unless you guys know of another company that is doing something to develop more production of these. I mean, we can only get like 20 at a time, 30 at a time when you call the company. So, and I know that a lot of other guys are having trouble getting them too. So I think compliance will be an issue. So.
Yeah, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we had done this education outreach program in several ports. As a direct correlation of that, we got a lot of requests for pingers because of that re-education. And Airmar out of Milford, New Hampshire, was the leader in manufacturing pingers that's still available within this region. There was another company, Duquesne, that went out of business, and there's a lot of problems with their pingers. Airmar had a reorder because they hadn't had any orders in some time. They had to reorder a lot of the parts they need in order to make these pingers, so there was a little bit of a backlog. We did investigate some other alternatives. There's a company out of California called Funmunda, and we can provide that information to anybody that would like that. Their pingers are a little bit more expensive, but they're smaller, a little bit easier to put on their nets, et cetera. At least that's what we've been told. So that's another area that's available. And there's another company in England that is manufacturing them and trying to export them into some of the shops in this area. So there are some other other areas where we can point you to try and get these pingers. And be glad to talk to anybody after, and we'll try and set you up with those contacts.
Okay, anyone else? Back to the council. Anything further? Thanks, Dave. I'm going to suggest that we flip-flop the next two items so that we take the Stellwagen Bank presentation first. You ready? You need to hit the button.